Jamunati Radhanachari. Jaya Mishnupad Paramahamsa Parvrajakacharya Asatara Satishri Shimada Savan Grace Asi Bhakti Vinabda Swami Maharaj Prabhupada Ki Adnama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Shrimati Bhakti Vinanta Swami Chinamane Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pacharani Nivasesis and Nirvani Paskachadi Satarani Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Uttapada Kamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavam Shcha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunakam Vitam Samsajivam Sadvoitam Sadvadutam Padijana Sahita Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakam Vitam Shcha Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Yes. My voice is low. So it's July 10th, 2015, Skype class from Hilo, Hawaii, reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 3, Chapter 4, Text 35 and 36. We're reading 35. Atmanam cha kuru shrestha. Krishnena mana shikshitam. Dayan gate bhagavate. Ruoda prema vivala. Oh, best among the Kurus. Krishnena. By Krishna. Manasa. By the mind. Ikshitam. Remembered. Jayan. Thus thinking of. Gate. Having gone. Bhagavate. Of the devotees. Ruroda. Cried loudly. Prema vivalaha. Overwhelmed by the ecstasy of love. Translation in purport by Srila Prabhupada. Understanding that he was remembered by Lord Krishna while quitting this world, Vidura began to cry loudly, overwhelmed by the ecstasy of love. Purport. Vidura was overwhelmed by the ecstasy of love when he understood that Lord Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, thought of him at the last moment. Although he thought of himself as insignificant, he was remembered by the Lord, by his causeless mercy. Vidura accepted this as a great favor, and thus he cried. This crying is the last word in the progressive path of devotional service. One who can cry for the Lord in love is certainly successful in the line of devotional service. We're also going to read text 36, which has no purport and finishes the chapter. Translation, after passing a few days on the bank of the river Yamuna, Vidura, the self-realized soul, reached the bank of the Ganges where the great sage Maitreya was situated. Thus end the Bhaktivedanta purports of the fourth chapter, third canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam entitled Vidura Approaches Maitreya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Atmanam cha kuru shrestha Krishnena manashekshitam Jayan Gate Bhagavate Ruroda Prema Vivalaha. Understanding that he was remembered by Lord Krishna while quitting this world, Vidura began to cry loudly, overwhelmed by the ecstasy of love. So we all want to be remembered by someone. We all want to be important to someone. And the Sanskrit here is astonishing, really. Manasa ikshitam jayan. Manasa is by the mind. Ikshita, when I first looked at the Sanskrit, I said, wait a minute, that means to see. So ikshita, manasa ikshita would mean there's a picture in the mind. There's an image in the mind. And jaya means meditation. Deep meditation on an image in the mind. So generally, this sort of description is given the other direction, that the devotee has deep meditation on an image in the mind of God. But here it's God who has deep meditation on an image in the mind of the devotee. And Bhagavan generally refers to God, but here Bhagavate refers to the devotee. So Krishna was having a deep image in the mind in full focus and meditation on Bhagavate, on the devotee. And such made Vidura cry at his insignificance. So this is again what we want. We want that people have a deep image in their mind with meditation on us. That's the urge of the conditioned soul. We want people in the world to be thinking of us. We want our picture to be in their mind. Nowadays, people often take pictures of themselves, right? Selfies. They take pictures of themselves and distribute those pictures to their friends. Why? They want their picture to be in the mind, in meditation, of other people. We want to be remembered at someone else's leaving the body. You know, if our mother, father, or sister, friend, they're dying, and we hear, oh, as they were dying, they remembered us. They thought of us. Oh, my dear wife, oh, my dear son, I love you, and then they die, that we were the most important person to them. That's what we look for. We hope to be remembered after our death, right? People, we often ascribe meaning to how long something stays. This is tied into the fact that things with real meaning are eternal, which Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, right? The things that have no meaning are temporary, and the things that have real meaning are eternal. So we want things to be eternal, and because things aren't eternal in this world, at least we want the memories to be eternal. We want people to remember us. We want people to put flowers on our grave, or we want to have a samadhi where they put flowers. We want something written about us. We think about what we want at our funeral and so forth. You know, this is very natural. However, the problem is that when we want this from other jivas in relationship to this temporary body and mind, such is merely pride. And it's interesting here that Vidura is mentioned in the purport as being someone who thought of himself as insignificant. He thought of himself as not worthy of being meditated on and remembered by anyone. And here he's being meditated on and remembered by the Lord. So the way of bhakti is deep humility through our relationship with the Lord. Humility is absolutely necessary for bhakti. Indeed, humility is necessary even for moksha. One cannot achieve any kind of genuine spiritual realization without humility. It's not possible. Why is that? Because spiritual realization means seeing the truth. And the truth is that we're very insignificant. That is the truth. You cannot see the truth and at the same time think that you are great. It's impossible. You can't think that you're the Lord of everything and the center and great and be situated in truth. So one has to come to humility, but the way the devotee comes to humility is by being important to God, by finding that desire for honor in God, not by the other methods of finding humility. And when Prabhupada defines humility in the Bhagavad Gita, he defines it as giving up the satisfaction of being honored by others. What greater honor is there than that somebody gets a picture of you in their mind in deep meditation, jhayan, at the time of their death? Because that's what's most important to us, isn't it? Yam yam vapi sram bhavam tvaja chante kalivram. Krishna says, whatever we think about at the time of death, that determines where we'll go. Why? Because what we think about at the time of death is indicative of what is the most important thing to us. I give the analogy a lot that we saw a house burning down one time, and this young mother had grabbed her children out of the house. She hadn't put on her shoes, she didn't take her money, she didn't take her papers, you know, her artwork. She took her children. You know, when your house is burning down, you take what's most important to you. In the same way, when the body is dying, you mentally try to take the most important thing. So what greater honor is there than that some person, what to speak of some very important person, grabs onto you and remembers you at the time that they are leaving the world? So such a great honor. We are all looking for that. And this satisfaction that other people think I am important. The satisfaction of being honored by others. We can really think of it as indicative of love. If we try to analyze love, we could say resists an analysis by its very nature. At the same time, it can be analyzed. Rupa Goswami goes through such a detailed analysis of love of God, for example, using rasa theology. But if we want to analyze what is love, we can say you find the other person fascinating. Like the gopis are so fascinated by Krishna that even when their eyes blink, it's disturbing. They want to just keep looking at Krishna. Something that we love, we want to keep examining it. We want to keep looking at it. I give the example all the time. I was giving a class. There was a mother in the room who had a one-month-old baby, and she was looking at that baby's toes for the entire class. So we're so fascinated. You know, she's seen the baby's toes so many times in that month that the baby had been there, and still she was fascinated by the toes. So we want someone to find us fascinating. This manasa ikshitam, that not only are they fascinated by our picture, but they're keeping our picture in their mind. Jaya, meditating on our picture, meditating on our name. They say the sweetest sound to a person is the sound of their name. We want people to say our name. You know, sometimes with honorifics, people don't say the name, you know. They just say, oh, Mataji, Mataji, no name. And then I'll be like, well, what about my name? You know, why are you just calling me by some title? You know, and no name. So someone to meditate on our name, someone to meditate on our form, on our qualities, right? On our activities. We're always trying to tell people what we've been doing. Usually they're not very interested. So we want this satisfaction of people meditating on our name, form, qualities, and activities. And we want people to meditate on them because they're fascinated by them. They're interested in them, not because they think they're going to get something from them, but because they're fascinated by them. And we want to be important to others. If someone meditates on us at the time of death, we're important to them. They include us in the history books. We must be important to them. We want people to care whether or not we're there. We want it to matter. We want to have value and meaning to other people. We want people to say, oh, I've missed you. We want people to want to see us, to go out of their way to see us. to want to spend time with us, to have it make a difference whether we're there or not. And we want people to rely on us and be relied upon by us. One person was telling me recently, you know, I had these friends turn against me and now I just, my solution is don't make friends. We want to have people feel that we're dependable, that we have their back, and we want to feel that they have our back, that they're there for us. And this satisfaction is something that we're seeking very, very intensely. And it, in fact, it's what's driving everything that we do in this material world. This urge, let me be loved by others, let me love others, and let me be loved by others. Let me be the lovable object of others. Let me get the honor and of others. So we're told to give this up. We're told we have to give this up in order to actually progress in bhakti. Bhaktivinoda Thakur in his Bhajana Rahasya equates the giving up of this desire with the stage of nishta, equating it with the trinada pisunichena taroriva sahishnuna amanina manadena kirtaniya sadahari. Of course, externally we can be trained to do this. Externally we can be trained to offer obeisances to others. And externally we can be trained, oh no, 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 I'm insignificant, I don't need anything. You know, you're the great one. And there are many cultures in the world where this sort of behavior is a very deep part of that culture. Always respecting others and not asking for respect in return. But on the heart level, this desire remains. I am a very important, lovable person. And I want that validated by others. I need to have it validated by others as much as possible, you know, constantly. Dhyam is a deep, concentrated meditation. That I need this adulation. I was reading some interview with the former Beatle, Paul McCartney. And he was talking about, you know, he was asked, why at your age, he's 70-something, do you keep touring the world and singing for audiences? He says, I love the adulation. I love the crowd loves me. That's my life. It's my food. That's what I do it for. So this is what's driving us in this world. And this we need to give up. Why? Because it's false. It's false on many levels. It's false because first of all, even as a soul, as a living entity, we are not the center. We are not the most important person. We are not the fascinating, valuable person. We cannot be the friend, Suridam, Sarvabhutana. We cannot, that's not our position. We cannot have anyone's back. We cannot always be there for them. You know, we can try, but we can't always be there for them. We might be on the other side of the world, or we might be sick, or we might just be incapable. You know, people sometimes, they stand by and watch while someone they love dies, and there's nothing they can do about it. You know, we're not able to have somebody's back. We're not able to be really important. When we die, the world goes on and nothing changes. You know, throughout the world, people who want to accomplish something, they often try to kill or remove the key important person. But, you know, none of us are key and important. Everyone's destiny goes on regardless of what we do or what we don't do. No one's destiny is dependent on us, what to speak of the destiny of the world. And, you know, we're not so fascinating. We're 1/10,000th of a tip of a hair. We're one soul among gazillion and gazillion of living entities. And in fact, if other people meditate upon us, it's not even good for them. They should be meditating on Krishna. So anyway, even on the level of a soul, that's not true. What to speak of on the level of this body and this mind? On the level of this body and this mind, there's really no significance to this temporary role and temporary personality. We've simply taken on the role of an actor in a drama. And if we walk off the stage, somebody else can easily take whatever role we are fulfilling. It's all just false, this this body is not our real identity. It's a temporary combination of the modes of material nature that exist for 8 billionths of a second of the lifetime of Lord Brahma, and the whole universe exists. This whole universe exists for one breath of the Lord, Bhutva Bhutva Pralayate. This body exists for such a tiny fraction of a time, this body, this particular psychology. It has so little meaning that it's almost laughable. So to ask for honor and prestige and love for this body and this mind, you know, please love this body, please love this mind, this personality that I'm exhibiting, it's so laughable. It's really a joke. And we're asking for honor for other living entities, for ourself, which is damaging those other living entities. Their love is meant to be given to Krishna. It's not meant to be given to us. Independently of Krishna, we become like a low-class person who tries to seduce somebody away from their rightful spouse when we're asking for this love to be given to ourselves. You know, we become somebody who goes to some married woman or some married man and says, I'm much more attractive than your partner. Please give everything to me. So we damage that person, and the whole thing is really laughable. And therefore, this pride has to be given up. Also, we can have pride on a very, how shall we say, even about spiritual things. Not only can we be proud about material things, we can be proud about spiritual things. We can think that we deserve more advancement than we're getting, and we can thereby fake our advancement in so many ways. The Prakriti Sahajiyas, of course, their whole principle is to imagine that they're more advanced than they are, and that is all based on pride. So this has to be given up. So how do we give this up? You know, the karma yoga, they tried to give this up by getting into the mood of what they are, the observer of their activities. They still do their activities, but without trying to enjoy the fruits as the observer. And they do this by offering the fruits to Brahman rather than to themselves. The Gyanis try to give this up by just meditating philosophically on the truth, and in that way being established as the observer. The Dhyan Yogis are a little better, that they try to give this up by meditating on the Lord in the heart. But generally, they're still doing this with an aim to their own liberation. So the Karma Yogis, Gyan Yogis, Dhyan Yogis, generally speaking, not always, but generally speaking, their mood is still that I am the center. I am doing this so that I can be detached from the false and I can be absorbed in the real for my own benefit. And the Bhakti Yogis have a very, very different way of achieving this insignificance. Very different and very astonishing, perhaps. And that is that they are looking for the satisfaction of being honored by others. Indeed, they haven't given up the satisfaction of being honored by others, but they've changed who is the other from which they want this satisfaction. Instead of wanting to be honored by other jivas on a false platform, they want to be honored by the Lord. Why? Because that's real. That's real. The Lord does love us. He loves each of us. As much as that mother was fascinated by her baby's toes, so the Lord is fascinated by each of the living entities. You know, today we don't see very many large families, but if someone has a lot of children, they still love each of those children, generally speaking. If somebody has 12, 15 children in their family, it's not that they only love the first one or they only love one of them. They love all of them. I mean, I'm here with my son and his wife. They have 9 children, and the youngest is still fascinating. You know, my son was sitting by his youngest child at dinner time And he was laughing at his youngest antics. Or we find, right, Ajamil in the Bhagavatam, he had so many children, but he was still fascinated by the youngest child. He didn't say, oh, I've had so many children, I've seen them all. You know. So Krishna is fascinated by each of us. He loves each of us. Each of us is important to him. He goes through so much trouble for each of us. I love it when Lord Vishnu says to Gopakumar, for so many lifetimes I was dancing like a fool, wondering when would you come back to me. I mean, if we think about how many living entities there are, our material mind becomes boggled. Just in whatever room we're in, just in our body, there's so many living entities besides we as the main soul. Yeah, there's so many bacteria, etc. in our body, the cells of our body. What to speak of in the room, there's so many living entities on every surface of the room. And what to speak of, you go outside and each clump of grass is a living entity, and each tree and each bug, and I mean, just within the very small space, practically invisible when you go up high, it's countless living entities. And if we take the whole planet and the fish and the bugs, and it becomes mind-boggling. And then each planet is inhabited by a similar number of entities, and there's uncountable planets, and we're one universe, and you know, the mind just starts reeling. We can hardly even imagine all the humans on this planet. They say a human being's only capable of an intimate relationship with 150 people. And yet Krishna, he's fascinated by all of us. And he finds each of us important. And he's there. Suridam sarva bhutanam. He's there for us. We can depend on him. And he wants to depend on us. He wants to be able to depend on us. You know, so generally we talk about how we should be absorbed in Krishna. Manmana bhava mad bhakto, maya shakta mana partha. This is the essence of bhakti, is to be absorbed in Krishna, to be fascinated by Krishna, to find Krishna important, to be there for Krishna, that Krishna is there for me. But here we're seeing how the Krishna is finding the devotee important. It's reciprocal. And the devotee is longing for this. We find in the story of Akura, in the 10th canto, where he's meditating how when I go to Vrindavan, Krishna and Balaram will say, Uncle Akura, and my whole life will be beautiful. And he says, those who aren't seeking to be recognized by Krishna, their life is condemned. I was saying that when we want others to recognize us, we become like the debauchee trying to lure someone away from their spouse. Similarly, when we want to be recognized by others, we become like a debauchee. You know, this, like Prabhupada says, the Vedic standard is when a woman's husband is away from home, she doesn't dress herself very nicely. I mean, the strict standards are that she doesn't even go to social events and laugh, which I don't think we could do that in modern society. But the idea is that when the woman's husband is away, she's not trying to be attractive to others. And it's not proper. If some married man is flirting with other women and some married woman is trying to attract other men. But to try to be attractive to your spouse, that is a good and natural thing, right? The woman is told that she should dress herself very nicely with golden ornaments and beautiful dresses to be attractive to her husband, clean the house with aromatic liquids and so forth and so on. The husband should treat the wife as the other half of his body. So to want to be honored by others, that is disturbance. But to want to be honored by Krishna, for the woman to want her husband to be attracted to her, for the husband to want his wife to be attracted to him, that is a good and healthy thing in society. For the soul to want to be attracted to God and want God to be attracted to them, That is real. And if God is honoring us, if we have that satisfaction, God honors me, why would we care to be honored by others? Why would it matter? You know, if you're friends with the Queen of England, what does it matter if some shopkeeper is disrespectful to you? You know, if you're the best friend of the head of Emirates Airlines, why do you care if some person at the counter is rude to you? You're like, you know, I'm best friends with the president of your company. It becomes meaningless. So this is how the devotee conquers this desire for honor and prestige, by wanting to be honored by Krishna. And very importantly, not wanting to be honored by Krishna because I'm so important. We want to be honored by others in this world because we think we're so important. But Krishna is not honoring us. Krishna is not meditating on us. Krishna is not putting our picture within his mind in deep meditation because we're so important, but just because he loves us. That mother wasn't meditating on her child's toes because that child was so important. The child was important to her. Not because she felt that child was important to the universe, but just because he was important to her. And why was he important to her? Because he was part of her. That's all. And this love of the mother for the little child is not because the child's doing anything useful for her. This one-month-old baby wasn't doing anything useful. But simply because the child is part of them. And in fact, this juxtaposition of I am very insignificant, and yet, at the time of his leaving the world, the Lord in deep meditation has the picture of me in his mind, is what causes ecstasy. This is so nicely explained by Narada and Uddhava to Gopu Kumar when they're explaining how to go to Vraja. They're saying you have to have a combination of love and humility. And each one is building on the other. So just recently, Aniruddha Prabhu, who's been temple president in Melbourne, Australia for, I don't know, 25 years or something like that. He and his wife have always been associated with the Melbourne temple. So he had his 60th birthday and coincidentally 25 years of service in Melbourne at the same time. So he had just arrived the night before from Indonesia. He was tired and he wasn't really even thinking about his birthday. And there was a huge surprise party for him, which he found very overwhelming. Why? Because he didn't expect it. He didn't think he deserved it. And I've given this example many times, that, you know, if you have $20 or euros or pounds or whatever currency you have, and you go to the store and you buy something that's worth $20, you know, you feel okay. If you buy something and find out it's worth only $5, that you could have gotten it for $5 at another shop, you feel disgusted. If you get something that normally is worth $100, you feel elated. So our happiness in things is in direct proportion to our feeling of undeservedness. That's why we so much enjoy gifts. Generally, we enjoy gifts more than things that we pay for. So something that I pay for, well, I earned it. And something that I get as a gift gives me much more satisfaction. Right? One of my grandkids was telling me the other day, I prefer to get things in the mail because it feels more like a gift, even if I've paid for it myself, because there's a time differential between when I paid for it and when I get it. We like getting things that we haven't earned. The more we feel we've earned something, the less satisfaction we get from it. As soon as I feel I deserve something, it can't really give me satisfaction. Well, of course I have it. I deserve it. And a lot of the angst between human beings on this planet is because we feel we get less than what we deserve. I do everything and no one else does anything. I do everything, so I should be treated with this way and that way. And it causes us so much pain this feeling of deserving. But when we have true humility, we think, I don't deserve anything. And someone who deserves nothing, which is the actual fact. And then I have the most wonderful, best person, the Lord of everything, the center of everything, the most important person, has my picture in his mind in meditation. So who wouldn't cry? Who wouldn't cry? How wonderful my Lord is, how much love the Lord has for me. That the Lord, who is the greatest, the unlimited, has my picture in his mind in meditation, although I've done nothing to deserve it. There's so many prayers like this by the Acharyas. You know, there's no sadhana. I mean, we might think, well, I'm really strict in my sadhana. I've earned my way back to Godhead. Who can really say? Every mantra, you're meditating on the Lord, you never commit any offenses. I mean, who can say, I'm so strict? I've perfectly kept all my vows without the slightest, even subtle deviation. I mean, I was earning. I mean, even if we could do that, can we really buy Krishna? Even if you could meditate on his name and form without deviating for a moment for billions of years, can you buy Krishna? Is that possible? How can we earn our way? But yet Krishna loves us. Yet Krishna loves us. And he's not just telling us meditate on him, he's meditating on us. So this is how the devotee comes to Krishna consciousness. This crying is not from something intellectual. Or like sahajiyas who practice crying like some kind of actor or something. It's from our meditation on how wonderful it is that the greatest person is absorbed in thought of me, a most insignificant and unworthy entity. And that's such a sweet thing, this combination of real humility and real love. It's so sweet that the devotee is just crying in appreciation. This is not a crying like a lamentation crying. It's a gratitude, loving, appreciative crying. And Prabhupada says that this is the last word in the progressive path of devotional service. When we cry like this, when there's some emotion, when it's not just something theoretical, you know, Allah Akbar, God is great. Why is he great? His greatness is that although he's everywhere and in everything, that I'm important to him. And what's really amazing is that each devotee thinks that he's the most important. Krishna doesn't just gather together his uncountable living entities and say, okay, you're all important to me. But Krishna gives each living entity the relationship that I'm just with you. I'm just in your palace. You know? Like when Krishna was fighting with those seven bulls to win the hand of Satya. And he expanded himself to show, don't worry, I can just be with you. Each queen is thinking, Krishna's just with me. Each gopi is thinking, Krishna's only dancing with me. Krishna's only sitting on my cloth by the Yamuna. Each cowherd boy is thinking, Krishna's just focusing on me. You know, Krishna's touching each blade of grass, each flower every day in Vrindavan. And each flower is thinking, I am the most important. Each jewel on the path is thinking, oh, Krishna's just touching me. He's relishing touching me. He likes to wear me. I'm his favorite peacock feather. I'm his favorite flute. each living entity has this relationship. Oh, Krishna's just milking me in the morning. So how can one not cry? That out of the unlimited living entities, Krishna's choosing to spend his time just with me. Krishna's meditating just on me. Krishna's going into deep meditation with my picture in his mind of just me. So this, he was crying and overwhelmed by this ecstasy of love. And it was in this mood that he went to hear from Maitreya, which is also interesting, that someone in this mood doesn't become generally, materially useless, but still does their duty with this mood within. They do their service. He had his business to do for the world. So with this feeling of love within, he went and did his service. So we have just a few minutes here because I do have to get on a conference call.
Four, but maybe I can get one in. Can you say why it was that Krishna remembered Vidura? Because in the Brihad Bhagavatamrita, you can imagine that the reticence of Vrindavan or even Uddhava would be more important. Oh, did I screw up?
Okay, so this is a very, very good question. Okay, this is a very good question. Why doesn't it say that Krishna was meditating in the mind on the picture of Radharani? Why isn't it Radharani? Why is it Vidura? Why is it somebody not from Vrindavan, not from Mathura or Dwarka, from Hastinapur? Somebody connected with the Pandavas, not even someone connected with the Yadus. We could think of so many more exalted devotees. Why wasn't Krishna meditating on Nanda and Yasoda, Subal, Sridham, his cows? Or among the Pandavas, why not Arjuna? But I'm sure that Krishna is meditating on all of his devotees. But Vidura is meditating on the fact that Krishna was meditating on him. Just like each gopi, each cowherd boy, each queen is aware that Krishna is meditating on them. So because this part of the Bhagavatam is dealing with Vidura, it's dealing with Krishna's meditation on Vidura. Certainly he's simultaneously meditating on all of his devotees. Another reason this is mentioned here is we're discussing in this section of the Bhagavatam how Krishna's message is going to go on. Right, the Bhagavatam starts with that now that Krishna's disappeared, this Bhagavatam is the incarnation of Krishna in this world. And who are the personalities that are going to carry the message of the Lord? The Lord is coming, Adaya Dahi Dharmasya Glanir Bhavati Bhavatar. The Lord is coming to restore Dharma. So with the absence of the Lord, who's going to be keeping Dharma in the world? So this is also specifically, in this context, what Krishna is thinking about. Krishna is thinking about the devotees that he's specifically empowering as he's leaving, who are going to continue to teach Dharma in the world, which is exactly what Vidura does by speaking to Maitreya. This becomes, of course, the verses of the Bhagavatam, which we will be hearing in this canto and by which we can learn about the Lord. So that's very important. Just like recently our godbrother Kormarupa Prabhu passed away from this world and left his body. So he was running a very big enterprise, care for cows in Vrindavan, for a very long time. And fortunately he had some warning of his passing. He got stomach cancer. So he had some notice he was going to go, and one of the things he did before he passed is he made sure that all of the legal affairs were in order for succession, that his cows would be taken care of. So this is one of the things that is incumbent on anyone who has a responsible position. This is one of the reasons the kings always want sons, if you ever wondered why they were so intent on having a son. they want to ensure succession. So here Krishna is specifically thinking about Vidura in terms of succession, which is specifically important in this context.
Made me feel very special in that it seemed like every word you said, Krishna was somehow speaking to me, because the whole message of your class seemed like it's exactly what I wanted to hear, what I needed to hear. So I want to thank you. That was wonderful.
Krishna is really special whenever he uses us as his instrument.
Mm. Well, he certainly did, especially today. He always does, but especially today. It was wonderful. Almost as if you were enlightening me. Krishna was enlightening and scolding me at the same time. So much talk about pride, etc. was just what I needed to hear. Like the class was just for me. Thank you.
Mataji, I don't know what you did, but your microphone just came in. You know, it's loud and clear. If you... Yogis. The first one was the Karma Yogi. The way you said it, if I remember correctly, was that they give up the fruits of their labor to Brahman. How would a Karma Yogi give it to Brahman, the fruits of their labor?
Well, the whole Varnashram system, which Prabhupada describes in his... in reference to the talks with Ramananda Roy, but it's not in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, it's in another book that was recently published that Prabhupada wrote when he was in India. He describes that the original Varnashram system is you see your work as part of the universal form of the Lord, and you see that you're part of the body of the universal form. In karma, that's karma. In karma yoga, you see that you're all one with Brahman, and everything is being done for the sake of the universe. I mean, when you hear sometimes people talk like this, you know, I'm doing my work for the good of the planet, I'm doing my work for the good of the universe. It's something like that. You know, even if people talk like I'm doing my work for the good of society. You know, if someone says, well, one reason that I stay with my wife, with my husband, and have a stable marriage is because it's good for society, which is true. That's a fact. But there's a difference between I'm taking good care of my children so I can enjoy my children, and I'm taking good care of my children as my duty to society. So Brahman is, you're just taking it bigger. I'm doing good for my children for the Lord. But you think of the Lord impersonally, like society. What does society mean? Is society a person? I'm doing this for the good of society. It's not. There's no individual. I'm doing this for my country. What do you mean, my country? You mean the piece of dirt with the artificial national border? Is that what you mean? You mean the president of your country? No. It's impersonal. It's for my country, it's for society, for the good of society. But yet, it's motivating, and it's higher than somebody just doing it for themselves. So someone thinking like that, I mean, look, probably, I wouldn't be surprised if the majority of theists on this planet are also impersonal, but they can be impersonalists, but they can say, I'm doing this for God, I'm offering this for God, with an impersonal idea of God. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.